It's interesting how sometimes things will change. I don't know, I tend to be a fairly personal, you know, quiet person as far as, you know, my private life. And had this situation happen at work where all of a sudden I lost my email address. I thought, oh, now I have to send a note to everyone at church and stuff so they can send me emails to the correct location. And so that means I'm going to have to let people know what happened. And again, as I start out here, it says, when bad things happen, what do we do? Is our faith a source of comfort to us? And so, again, as many people will have known, I think from a note that I sent out explaining why I had to change my address, after 35 and a half years, I lost my job at Empire Life. And it was one of those sudden things. And again, because I'm talking to family here, I can it gives me a chance to relate what the story was, where my director happened to come into the area and said, oh, Jim, they want you in a meeting room over in the other building. And so I went to the meeting room, and my boss was there, and someone from Human Resources was there. And there was a third person there. And again, my boss said a couple of sentences saying that my time at Empire is over, and you know, thank you for your time here, but the human resources person will talk about what package we have for you. And so it was one of those sudden things. So my boss left. And again, I like my boss. We get along really well. And I think that what happened came from higher up. And it was just a direction given to my director, who I like as well, and to my manager. So I had this challenge of, after 35 and a half years, having to face moving on and moving on to the next step. And again, for many people, this would be a really traumatic thing. For me, so far, there hasn't been too much trauma to it. One reason for that is because I have 35 and a half years, I have a reasonable pension that's saved up, so I don't think I have a financial burden that's going to be in front of me. So then the next part of it is, am I ready to stop working if that's what I opt to do? And I think, like most people, I was born ready to stop working. So whenever that happens, again, the way that I would tend to spend my days is I would, work 8 hours at work, and then I'd come home and spend 4 or 5 hours working on church things for the website and other church-related activities. So I look at this as an opportunity to spend some more time, doing some of the website work. And one of the other benefits is kind of opportunities that you can use to, look after your health a little more. I often shot off my mouth to people saying, well, if I didn't have to work, then I'd lose the weight like this. Well, now I don't have to work. And so the challenge is there. Interestingly, one of the things, my 35th anniversary gift from Empire, I got to pick from a number of items. I picked a Fitbit, which counts your steps. So it gives me an opportunity for the last probably 2.5 weeks now. I've been doing 10,000 steps a day, and it's something that I just know is part of my routine every day, and it's easy to do. So thank you. One of the other things that I found really comforting is again, when you let people know, when you let them into your life and let them know, then you have opportunities to hear back from them. And I've had lots of people who've given me phone calls and sent me notes saying, don't worry about this, Jim. the same thing happened to me. There's people that have had similar things happen to them. And it's not even just in the Ottawa church area. In some of the other church areas, people have been sending me notes and calls. And it's kind of interesting because there's a TV program that has this lawyer that does employment law. And the number of people that have come up to me saying, you make sure you see a lawyer, Jim, because it can make a real difference in these types of cases. And so
So I've never seen that program before, but three or four people at least had come up to me saying, oh, this is a really neat program. I watch it all the time. And it talks about, again, what the purpose of the law is to make sure that people are properly compensated. No company has to employ anybody. They can choose at any time to stop that employment, but what the law says is that they have to provide proper severance. And so that's, I guess, what a process I'm at right now is ensuring that I get proper severance. And then the other thing that comes to mind when this is happening to me is that for many years at Empire, they've been able to offer people, once they hit 55 or 60 years old, there have been different times where they have early retirement packages, which is great for the company because they get to give a benefit to long-time employees, and it's great for the employees because they get to retire early with fewer penalties for retiring early. So the problem is the way that the interest rates and things are now, there is no lump of money in the pension fund anymore for them to ever be able to do that. And so it's a situation where I probably wasn't going to retire for another couple of years, and now I'm probably going to be able to retire where Empire is saying, here's the last 2 years of your employment. We're going to pay you for doing nothing. And so it's almost like an early retirement benefit that Empire has no money to give that benefit out to. So for that reason, I look at this as potentially being the silver lining to this is that I may have an opportunity to have the equivalent of an early retirement benefit. So I say that there's other examples. So tragedy when... yes, Al?
I'd just like to add a word of encouragement.
Sure.
I retired 28 years yesterday, so I think it's great.
Wow. That's awesome. The interesting thing is that we as members of society, there are things that can happen like that, whether it's things with our health, whether it's things with our family or our friends. There's potential tragedies or even blessings, but tragedies that are available or they're all around us. And I give some other examples that they could be death, sudden death, a prognosis of an illness. So we have the situation now with Gord in Kingston where I know there's times where he's talked about baptism here and that he was really eager for that to happen. And now he's got this prognosis where you're not going to be living very much longer. And so I'm sure it'll be some of the things that I'll be able to talk to him about in the time that he still has left. So death and illness, there's financial pressures, there's stress from the job, from the jobs that we do and stress from family situations. And again, it all just piles on and potentially causes things like depression and illness as well. For me, one of the places I find comfort is in prayer and in encouraging scriptures. And one of the other places that I find comfort is in some of the writings that the church has done. Ron Dart, who was a longtime minister with CGI, wrote a book, a little booklet, and it's called When Tragedy Strikes. And I've talked about it at least once before here in a message, but it's one where I constantly tend to go to that booklet when tragedy strikes for one of my family, family members, someone I know, because it has about 10 points that it makes in the booklet. It's not very long. It's really a short booklet, but makes a few powerful points that it's nice to be reminded of, because sometimes you'll get spinning off and your head will start spinning on things and you go off course. And I find that booklet happens to have a few points that are very grounding, and I list a couple of those points here. The first one being, life is short. So at this point in my life, I don't want to waste a whole bunch of time grieving about a job that I left behind. Interestingly, for probably the last 20 years or so, I've had to have my cell phone, and I had to carry it up every night and plug it in by my headboard, and I've always had to be mentally prepared that that phone could go off with some problem that's happened in Kingston, where I live at the head office, or in any of the branch offices across the country. There's all kinds of things that I may end up being woken up in the middle of the night, and I'd be responsible for fixing those things. And so for the last couple of weeks, I don't even have a cell phone at this point, and it's so awesome being able to go up to bed and not have the stress and the worry of, I'm really tired. I hope I don't get a phone call tonight. And so that's an example of, life is short, so don't stress about things that you can't necessarily control. Do your best within that situation, but don't stress about it. And in Psalm 90, there's a scripture that applies to this idea really appropriately, where it says in the prayer to God, "So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? And have compassion on your servants. O satisfy us early with your mercy, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days." So it'd be an awesome thing to be happy every day of your life, and that's not necessarily something that's going to happen, but the idea of numbering our days, realize that we're not going to be here forever, and that life is made up of various stages. There's a book called Passages that I remember studying in sociology, which talks about the passage from being youth into kind of the when you start your career, and then to middle age, and then retirement, and it talks about some of the stresses and some of the features that make up each of those passages as you go through these different stages in life. And again, it says in verse 16, "Let your work appear to your servants, and your glory to their children. And let the beauty of the Eternal our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands for us." Yes, establish the work of our hands. A second point made in the booklet is that accidents and mistakes will happen. And it's kind of interesting because, again, in my 35 and a half years, there's many of those years where I was a star. the most beloved of my managers and director because of the nature of the work that I was able to do and some of the giant projects that I was managing that were done successfully. And so it's kind of interesting as you transition through your career. And like is mentioned in the book of Exodus, there arose a Pharaoh that didn't know Moses. Eventually you get to a point where there's a new management team and they don't necessarily know all the things that you've done throughout your career. And so this is a situation where in Ecclesiastes 9 it says, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance will happen to them all." So there's no guarantee, even if you were a star in your early career, and even into your later career, there's no guarantee that bad things won't happen, that someone will make a decision, that it's their authority to make that decision, and they'll make that call. And so there are sometimes things outside of your control that you need to adapt to and realize that society isn't just focusing on you. You're not the only person to have ever lost a job or have had a death of a friend or a loved one to get a diagnosis of an illness. And so don't feel like the whole universe is conspiring against you yourself. Realize that this kind of thing happens to lots of people. And again, it applies when we think about it ourselves, and it also applies when we're trying to help somebody else who's come into a situation like this. And again, part of the reason for this message today is we as friends and as parents and as neighbors have a circle of people that we have contact with, And different times, those people, there's going to be tragedy that happens in their lives. So yes, it can happen in ours, but it also happen in our circle of friends' lives as well. And we need to be able to be encouraging and to have some words that will help them. Another point that was made in the booklet is that it's the response to tragedy that counts. So again, the title is When Tragedy Strikes. And the point that he's making is it's not necessarily to focus on the tragedy. You need to focus on what your response to that tragedy is. And again, in Ecclesiastes it says, consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that men can find out nothing that will come after him. So again, when things are going great and you're getting great blessings, it's easy to be really thankful to God. But sometimes things won't go great, and sometimes there will be adversity or tragedy, and you have to realize that that also comes from God. So be happy when it's good times, but when it's challenging times, the word here is consider. So again, there's another spot in Ecclesiastes where it talks about, you know, better is the house of mourning than the house of mirth, because you're going to learn more from some of these challenges that happen in your life. So again, it says in that in Ecclesiastes 7 that God has balanced prosperity and adversity against each other. So as far as some other points that came to mind is talking about, again, the message, the title of the message is Signs of the Times. And the place that I got that title was from doing my walks with my Fitbit. I start out in a direction, and I'm just walking around the various streets of Kingston, and different times there'll be a church, and there'll be a sign out in front of the church, and it'll say some different things on it. And so we'll find a little later in the message, I'll be talking about some of the messages that I saw on some of the little community churches that I passed in my walks around the city. Again, in dealing with tragedy, the next point that I list here at the bottom is to find comfort in brethren and family and friends. And people reach out to let you know that similar things have happened to them, and it's a comforting thing. They'll say that misery likes company, but again, it's an interesting situation when you find that, you know, people have had a similar, you know, I didn't realize that you had lost your job at some point, or I didn't realize that you had that same illness. And when people open up and share that with you, it helps make bonds that are sometimes stronger than the bonds that you can make, you know, playing softball together, or, you know, just visiting at church and talking together. That sometimes the bonds, when it's a tragedy or adversity that you're sharing, that you can really develop some close friendships. And so don't be afraid to reach out when you see somebody that's hurting, or to be welcoming of people reaching out to you. On the next page, there's something called the Holmes-Rahe Stress Scale. And this was located, the first place I'd ever seen this was in one of the church booklets talking about the 7 laws of radiant health. So this goes back to probably the 1960s. And what this scale does is it gives a list of all these events that can happen in your life, and it assigns points to them. And if you add up the number of points at the bottom, there's a score comment that says, if you have from 11 to 150 points, you only have a low to moderate chance of becoming ill in the near future. But if you have from 300 to 600 points, you have a very high or high risk of becoming ill in the future. So these life events, and some of them are positive. it's not necessarily even just negative life events that will cause, you know, increased stress on you, and that stress can result in further illness. So it's kind of interesting to look through some of the items in the list. It talks about a death of a spouse as being the largest item, and it's worth 100 points in itself. And again, for some people, the death of a spouse may even be more stressful or more taxing on them than what's listed here. The intent of this is just to give you a sense that there's lots of life events, and each of them can have a toll on your body because of the stress that it potentially brings. So divorce, there's separation, going to jail, a death of a family member, all of those things have points associated with it. But even things like changes in your school or in your church activities, change in your social activities, maybe you might be part of a bowling league and maybe that's over now. So even something like that, that's a change in your routine, is going to cause stress. So this is something that you could potentially take home and have a look through the list and see how susceptible you are, where, you know, the number of these types of events that have happened in your life. And again, the purpose of it is to help you become aware that, all these things that I'm juggling, it might be making me sick, and to be aware of that, and hopefully to help you deal with it. With this list, I was reminded of one of the techniques of Satan that he used with Job, and that is to pile on. when one bad thing happens, to pile on other things. And again, if we turn to Job 1 and 2, it would talk about the list of things that happened to Job, and it's interesting in reading it because it's just one after the other. Because God said, okay, I'll allow you to to have your way with Job, because I think that he's going to be able to hold up. And so Satan says, okay, and here's what Satan chooses to throw at Job. So the first item was when the raiders killed his servants and stole all his oxen and donkeys. And before he had finished talking, the next servant comes running to him and says, fire of God fell from heaven and killed your servants and all your sheep. So it's kind of interesting. So even though it was Satan doing the punishment, the way the servant describes it is fire from God, destroyed this. The next servant, came running and saying, the Chaldeans have killed all your servants and stole all your camels. And the next one comes and says, a great wind killed your sons and your daughters. And then we know in Job 2, where Satan was saying, all these external things are bad, but let me touch his body, and that'll really make a difference. And again, Job's health was taken, and that's talked about in Job 2. So examples of we need to, as we're dealing with tragedies in our lives, realize that as people with God's Spirit, Satan hates you, and Satan, if he wants to try to get at you, here's an example of the techniques that he'll use, and that's to pile on things. So usually when one bad thing happens, there'll be potentially other bad things that'll come along as well. That's awesome. And again, some of the encouragement that has been sent to me is saying that this may be an unexpected blessing, because A, there's this extra income that I'm going to get that if I just retired, I wouldn't be getting all this severance pay and things like that, paid vacation days and all of that stuff paid out. If I just retire, it would just be here's your pension, and so I'm getting this huge financial benefit. Plus, it's just in the nature of a lot of men to just keep working. You get up every morning and you go off for a lot of people that's their identity. Their identity is in the work they do. I've had the benefit of working for a prestigious company in Kingston, for 35 years. I know my value to the company. I know that I have been valued by the company, and so my self-esteem is there's no problem there, because I know that I've done good work and I benefited the company. But for some people, when they lose their job, I remember getting out of high school or getting out of college or even when you're still in college and you go looking for summer jobs and you go looking at when you finish college for your first job, I remember the stress and the you know, at that point you don't have this confidence because you haven't done years of good work for someone. And so you're going out and you're offering up your skills and saying, you know, I would like a job and here's what I can offer. And you know, there's different doors that close, and I just remember the job of job hunting to be a really stressful thing in my life. And it was a time when you know, pretty low self-esteem. You know, you go and you go looking and not everybody wants the skills that you have. And so I've been fortunate to be able to work for you know, one large company for what I would suggest to be the length of my career. And so I haven't had to, you know, do that process of looking for work over and over again. So one of the things talked about here on the second page, third page, I guess, no, is that this is given me, and when tragedy strikes, you have this opportunity to practice more of the seven laws of radiant health. So again, I dug out this old booklet that I appreciated back in the past, and it talks about different things that you can be doing that's going to help your health. And again, as you know, at all stages of your life, if you don't have your health, if you don't have good health, then you're going to be limited. And so taking care of your health is really important. And again, this is an opportunity for me to be able to spend more time in doing each of these things. So taking better care of the food that I'm involved with, cleanliness and dress, getting sunshine and fresh air and exercise and sleep and rest, avoiding bodily injury, and again, continuing to work with a positive attitude. Because again, it's when you get negative and you know, down in the dumps, and you know, that's where it becomes a spiral downward. And we want to try to avoid that. So I mentioned again that one life change that I've had has been implementing walking using this Fitbit that I have on my wrist. And my daughter was a great example of that. A year or two ago, she decided that she wanted to go ziplining, but she had to lose a certain amount of weight before she'd be able to do that. And so she set a goal and worked on her diet, worked on using her Fitbit to have, again, I'm 10,000 steps. She's anywhere between, you know, 25,000 and up to 40,000 steps in a day. She goes hiking through, there's different provincial parks in the Kingston area, and she'll go on the hiking trails in those provincial parks that, you know, it's 27 kilometers in one day. And again, she has a couple of girlfriends that will often go with her on the really long ones. Because I'm thinking, you know, what happens if you sprain your ankle and you're 13 kilometers into your trek? And it hasn't happened yet. So Shannon is my youngest daughter, but she's been a great example to me of someone who's been able to lose the weight. And she did get to do her ziplining adventure. I got to see the videos of the ziplining that they did, and looked like they had lots of fun. So I've been walking with this Fitbit, and as I mentioned, as I go through some of the streets of Kingston, there's different little community churches that'll have signs out front. And so I thought to finish off the message, I'd talk about some of the signs of the times that we see. So again, the first sign of the times that we see in my example was just that, you know, no job is guaranteed, and that you need to be aware that things can change quickly. So that's one sign of the times that exists in our society today. The first one that is listed here is from the First Christian Reformed Church. And the sign says, "Why pray when you can worry?" And again, what they're doing there is they're just flipping around words. The way they would normally be said is, "Why worry when you can pray?" And again, by switching it around, you get kind of a different twist of meaning. And so I thought that was interesting and effective to switch those around, because again, what you want to do is you want to create a hook in someone's mind to get them thinking, you know, hold on, what's wrong with this, or what's different with this? And again, they just transferred those two words. So the idea of the scripture that came to mind when I read this was in Matthew 6:25, where it says, "Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life." This is, of course, Christ talking to his disciples. So don't worry about your life, what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink. Don't worry about your body, what you're going to put on for clothes. Is life not more than food and the body more than clothing? So Jesus, to his disciples and to all of us, gives us some pretty down-to-earth instruction. You know, don't worry about some of that stuff. In verse 26, "Look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow or reap or gather to barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. And are you not more of value than they? Which of you, by worrying, can add one cubit to his stature? So why worry about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I say that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Now if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is today here and tomorrow thrown in the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not worry, saying, 'What shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear?' For after all these things the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble." So, again, the advice that Christ gives is, you know, focus on today. Again, it's nothing wrong with planning for tomorrow, but, you know, don't worry about things that are way off that you have little control over. The second sign I encountered from the King's Court Free Methodist Church says, "God is perfectly faithful, merciful and loving, great and good." And when I saw that, I thought to myself, the message is true and wonderful. God is all of those things. But I have scales there because it might also be seen to be very unbalanced, because God also has some fearful and awesome qualities who also make him God. So yes, he's faithful and merciful and loving and great and good. But in Deuteronomy 4:24 it says, "For the eternal your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God." And in Hebrews it says, "For we know him who says, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the eternal.' And again, 'The Lord will judge his people. It is a fearful thing to fall in the hands of the living God.'" So again, the sign saying God is perfectly faithful and merciful and loving is correct, but he's also a just God. And so we need to realize that God is, you know, God is more than what they were necessarily trying to reflect in the sign. In Proverbs 6 it says, "These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. The first one was a proud look." I was trying to practice what a proud look is, because sometimes you think in terms of a little child who, you know, got a good mark, and so they run up and they're excited. "Hey, Mom, here's what I got on my paper." And there's nothing wrong with that proud look. But the proud look that is wrong is the one where somebody has, you know, some kind of a superiority, like, "Huh, I beat you in that." So that's the proud look that God hates, so I'm not going to do it anymore. A lying tongue. Hands that shed innocent blood. God hates murder. A heart that devises wicked plans. God hates that kind of wickedness. Feet that are swift to running in evil. And a false witness who speaks lies. And one who sows discord among brethren. So God hates those things. And so we want to make sure that we're 180 degrees in the other direction. So we're not going to sow discord among brethren. We're going to try to encourage and sow unity among brethren. When we point out that God is holy and just, it means that people need to change their lives. And again, the problem that I saw with that sign that they had in front of the church is just saying that, you know, God is a big cuddly bear there. You don't need to have anything to worry about, where we know that the real God has expectations of people, and you may have to change your life to have a proper relationship with the real God. The next sign shows all that, what do we call it? I guess it's a lettering from, must be Korean lettering. So it's from a Korean church. Presumably it's a Christian church because there's a cross that's part of their sign as well. But when I read that sign, I thought to myself, hey, I can't read this sign. And what it reminded me of is that in our society today, people from all over the world have come into Canada, have come into United States, have come into Great Britain. And each one of those groups that comes in often will bring their own religion with them. So using the example of the Kingston Korean Church, which may be a Christian church, if there's other groups that come in, whether it's Muslim groups or groups that have some of the Oriental religions that are part of what are made up, there's Indian religions. So there's lots of false gods out there and false religions, and they have their churches as well. And so when I saw that sign, it reminded me of a few scriptures. In Judges 8:33 it says, "So it was as soon as Gideon was dead that the children of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal birth their god." So again, there's an example of when there's a righteous person in Israel, a righteous judge, in this case Gideon, Israel is good. But as soon as the good person leaves the scene, the nature of Israel was to turn to evil. In 1 Kings, it says, "For it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David." So we have the example of Solomon, who had 700 wives and 300 concubines, and a lot of them were just political marriages where to make a peace treaty with a local nation. The king of that nation would give Solomon one of his daughters as a wife. And so Solomon had all these little, has had wives, and their wives brought their religion with them. And what's pointed out here is that when all of that stuff is readily available and it's in your midst, then even Solomon, who had that tremendous relationship with God early in his life, where God gave him a dream and said, "Ask, you know, what would you like?" And Solomon asked God for wisdom, because to rule such a people needed wisdom. And God was so impressed with that answer that he said, "Because you didn't ask for long life or health or wealth, I'm going to give you all of those things. But because you asked for wisdom, that was an awesome thing for him to ask for." So even though Solomon had that relationship with God, having a vision and a discussion with God where he's blessed by God directly, he still had his heart turned later on in his life because of this false religion that was around him. In Deuteronomy 12, it says, "When the Eternal your God cuts off from before you nations, which you go to dispossess, and you dispossess them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you're not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, 'How do these nations serve their gods? I will do likewise.' You shall not worship the Lord your God that way, for every abomination to the Lord that he hates, they've done to their gods, for they burn even their sons and daughters to the fire to their gods. Whatever I command you, be careful to observe it. You should not add to it nor take away from it." So again, we have this awesome example here of what God intended for his people, what he intended for Israel, and what's best for a country. So it's best for a country to not welcome in other gods. The last one on this page, number 4, is from the Kingston Alliance Church. On their sign, it says, Coffee Cafe, open 9:45, worship service at 10:30. So I was kind of surprised at that because I'm thinking, what they're trying to do to promote for people to come in is, we've got a coffee cafe. And so for 45 minutes, you can, you know, enjoy different coffees or whatever. And it's not wrong to promote fellowship. And so I look at it and say, okay, it's a church that's trying to promote fellowship, encourage people to come out a little early and be able to talk. But with all the things that they could use to draw people, they're choosing to, you know, to use that as their hook. In 1 Peter 4:18, it says, Now if the righteous one is scarcely saved, where will the ungodly and sinner appear? So again, there's a lot of things that people could choose to focus on, and a lot of things that a small church, a community church, can try to use to draw people in. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, it's like, you know, free coffee, come here and you can have, you know, enjoy our coffee cafe. It's a long way from the gospel of the kingdom. And the last page, which again was from the same church that I started with, because it's been a week later and they'd put up a different sign. The sign now says, People with tact have less to retract. And I look at that as being a truism. It's something that it's what we might call common sense. Yes, it makes perfect sense that if you're tactful, you're careful in what you say, then you're not going to have to take your words back nearly as often. And there's several spots in Scripture that make that exact point. One spot was Ephesians 4:29, where it says, When you talk, don't say anything bad, but say the good things that people need. Whatever will help them grow stronger. Then what you say will be a blessing to those who hear you. So again, that's exactly what our goal is. When we're encouraging other people, we want to say positive things. We don't want to say negative things that are going to tear down. Say positive things that will help them grow stronger. And then what you're saying is a blessing to them, to those who hear you. So that was from the easy reading version. From the Good News Bible, James 1:26 says, Do any of you think you're religious? Here I am in a room full of people who on a Saturday, a sunny day outside, are sitting in here. So I would suggest this is probably a religious group of people. James is pretty bold. He says, Do any of you people think you're religious? And then he goes on to say, If you don't do this, your religion is worthless and you deceive yourself. So for someone who's religious, for somebody to say, if you don't do this, your religion is worthless and you deceive yourself, it's pretty powerful. So what is the thing that James is saying is so important? He says, if you do not control your tongue, your religion is worthless and you deceive yourself. If you shoot off your mouth and you don't have proper control, then James is saying you're deceiving yourself if you think that you could be a godly person. In Proverbs 11:13 it says, No one who gossips can be trusted with a secret, but you can put confidence in someone who is trustworthy. So again, people with tact, that's what we hope to be, people who can be trusted and can be trustworthy. In James 1:19, So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. So again, we can always keep our ears open and be swift to hear. Doesn't mean everything that we're going to hear is truth or is wisdom, but we can hear that. But then be slower to speak. Some people are just so eager to say stuff, to blurt stuff out. That's the people that have to retract it because they end up saying the wrong things. swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. And again, in Psalms, it says, and this was an interesting prayer because I don't remember hearing this prayer before, where it says, "Eternal, set up a guard for my mouth." I'm from Kingston, and when I think of a guard, I think of the Fort Henry Guard. They're all marching, and they all march in unison, and they have their gun with them. And here we have a prayer saying to God, "Set up a guard for my mouth. Keep watch at the door of my lips." So again, the guard you put at a doorway, because that's where the in and out is going to be happening, and that's where you need a guard to be positioned. "But set up a guard for my mouth to keep watch at the door of my lips. Lord, help me control what I say. Don't let me say anything bad." So that's just two different translations of the same verse. And again, the last verse that's listed here from Matthew 12 is a warning from Christ where he says, and again, this is where we have the with a sign, it says, we have less to retract. Sometimes it's hard to take back what you've said, to take back your words. And Christ in Matthew 12 says, "But I say to you, for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you'll be condemned." And so we have the instructions from Christ himself that we need to be careful with what we talk about. So, in closing this message about signs of the times, I've certainly learned that I am loved and valued by lots of people because of the way that people have reached out when I've had this tragedy. And again, in some ways, I look at it very positively as well, that this may be an opportunity that I would never have chosen necessarily to stop working at this time, but I may have the opportunity now to devote some more time to church than I have in the past. If I have enough in my retirement to be able to retire now, then why not do it now while I'm still younger, be able to work on my health and spend time with my family? And so often things that might seem to be bad at the beginning might turn out to be well.